Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, Micheál Martin is in Paris for that summit of world leaders co-hosted by the French President Macron and British Prime Minister Keir Starmer to discuss the defence of Ukraine and the long-term security of Europe. Well, to discuss this further, we're joined by Europe editor and presenter with Channel 4 News, Matt Fry. Matt, good to have you with us. Now, the meeting was assembled first and foremost to talk about Ukraine and security, but given that news overnight about tariffs, do we expect that they will also be on the agenda?
Well, I think what's on the agenda is the unpredictability, or the predictable unpredictability, of Donald Trump and the chaos that ensues, both in the national security field, both in terms of Europe's security vis-a-vis Ukraine and Russia, and also tariffs. And I think, as your previous speaker said, you know, there is a sort of there's a feeling in European capitals that they really have no idea where next Friday will land, whether it'll be 25% tariffs, whether it'll be some sort of commitment for some kind of security guarantee regarding Ukraine or not. And I think, in a sense, you know, Donald Trump is so transactional, so capricious, and so whimsical that it's actually done more to undermine any sense of both trading and, you know, military security in Europe than any threat than one can imagine from Russia, apart from perhaps the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at all the things that have been happening in the last few weeks and months, Claire, it's all about positioning yourself to deal with Donald Trump. And when you're in a country like Britain, which supposedly has a very strong, I think it's now strong officially, not special relationship anymore, but a strong relationship with America, well, if the other side of that bridge is prone to a regular earthquake, but you have no idea how big that earthquake is, it makes that bridge look very wobbly indeed.
It certainly does. And we heard there before the break as well, Danny McCoy from IBEC saying that Europe has no choice but to respond with fire here, to retaliate in exactly the same way as Donald Trump fires the tariff shots at us. Do you agree, or do you get that sense from Europe that that is what's going to happen?
Well, that is certainly the sense from Europe. I'm not sure if that's the sense from Britain, which is, after all, outside the EU. I mean, if Europe responds with fire, and, you know, let's wait and see whether they will, there's some strong rhetoric coming out of Ursula von der Leyen and out of Emmanuel Macron, less so out of Giorgia Meloni, less so out of the Dutch Prime Minister. So, you know, this is a nuanced response. But at some stage, you know, they're all going to be gathering around the campfire, and they'll circle the wagons and they'll come up with something. And I suspect they won't, because they have the power and the clout, you know, of kind of 460 million consumers, which is bigger than the US internal market. They will be able to do something. Britain, on the other hand, you know, no mates Britain outside the club, outside any club, is very conscious, I think, of its island status. And they hate to talk about Trump by name. They hate to talk about the tariffs that have just been imposed. And, you know, yesterday we had our Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, already under some duress, you know, coming up with some really rather drastic benefit cuts from the Labour Party. This is the party that's supposed to be on the side of the weak and the, you know, and the vulnerable in society, basically cutting their benefits short by, you know, to the tune of £4,000 per person per year of those affected, saying that actually they are also dealing negotiations with the likes of, you know, Musk and Zuckerberg and Bezos in order to exempt them from the digital sales tax, which brings it about £1 million a year, because that might sweet talk the Americans into exempting the Brits from some of the sanctions. So again, they're dealing with the bully who is Donald Trump, not by, you know, fire meets fire, but fire meets lollipops.
Yeah,
does that work?
I heard one of the Lib Dem MPs on radio this morning saying that Britain should immediately impose a tax on Tesla cars rather than cowering in the corner. But as you say, Britain out on its own with a very weak economy, it's difficult to take that stance, isn't it, in those circumstances?
It's very difficult. And of course, there is a sensible interpretation, which is that, you know, you don't want to fall into the trap of a trade war. And this is the trap that Donald Trump has, you know, has created. I mean, if we impose 25% tariffs on everything that they produce, they're going to go up to 50%. And then what do we do? Do we go up to 50%? Before you know it, before we've even had our first Easter egg, we're in the middle of a fully fledged trade war, which will shut down large parts of the global economy. And, you know, and that is not a good thing to do. On the other hand, he is a bully. He is bullying us. He's very openly stated that if you're a European car manufacturer and you want to create those cars, make those cars in America, that's fine, because that'll create American jobs and that'll be good for American consumers, and you will not be subject to any tariffs. You might even get a tax break. Then he added this other point, which is actually quite significant, but has got lost in the noise, which is that if you buy an American-made car on credit, which is what the vast majority of Americans do, you can use that credit to write off your federal tax return in the way that you can use your mortgage interest to write off against your federal tax return. This is a significant incentive for people not to buy a Honda or a Mercedes or a BMW. I mean, there will be a lot of pain here, especially in Canada and Mexico, but also in Europe and in Asia. And frankly, it gets back to the key question, which is at the bottom of all of this. Does Donald Trump care whether the markets go belly up or not? Because it has always been said the one guardrail in the absence of human guardrails in the cabinet of Lickspittle loyalists are the markets. Well, the markets have been going south now for 2 months, and he doesn't seem to care very much. Now, is that because he doesn't understand the numbers, or because he genuinely doesn't care because he can't get re-elected anyway?
Well, it was always said of him in the past that he did care very much about the markets, and the markets kept him in check. But as you say, it doesn't seem to be working now or having the same effect now. Matt, we should come back and talk about this coalition of the willing meeting, which is underway right now. So Russia insisted during the peacekeeping or the ceasefire talks that the European peacekeeping troops are a red line for them. I mean, how realistic and sensible is it for Europeans to insert themselves into that process between the Russians and the Americans, risking ire on both sides?
Not at all, I would say. I think the problem with this so-called, you know, ceasefire process, or whatever you want to call it, is that there's not much of a process. And like everything else, it's very chaotic. What we do know is that the Russians are exploiting this chaos to stick to their maximalist lines. These are the following: no European or NATO peacekeepers or ceasefire keepers or trigger holders, whatever you want to call them, on Ukrainian soil. And of course, you know, you talk to the Brits and the French, and they say valiantly, yes, we shall send forth our 20,000 troops. And then you say to them, but hang on a minute, you know, J.D. Vance and Donald Trump and Pete Hegseth actually have said these troops will be on their own. You can organize your own security. We will not be providing America's defense shield, you know, in disguise for those troops. When you say that very clearly, and the Americans have been reiterating that kind of over and over again, who cares to listen, suddenly the idea of sending those troops into harm's way is a lot less attractive, and they will be in harm's way. I think, you know, you talk to military planners here, they are in no doubt that if you send a single European soldier, you know, with a European helmet into Ukraine, wherever he might be, the Russians will try and take a pot shot at him or her to test whether NATO is as good as its charter. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, if I was Estonia, you know, or indeed Britain, and I had to rely on America to come, you know, to come good on Arctic Chapter 5 commitments, you know, one for all for one, I wouldn't be so certain.
Yeah, it's just I was reading last night that the French have said, we are keeping the Americans involved in this process. We're briefing them on everything that we're doing here with the Coalition of the Willing. And I see that Emmanuel Macron now has spoken with Donald Trump ahead of this meeting today. Again, it goes back to that really difficult balancing act of not isolating Europe too far away from the States, but also making it very clear that if Europe needs to, it is willing and able to go it alone.
But Claire, the point is also this, that, you know, Emmanuel Macron and Donald Trump, who get on quite well, you know, there's a bit of a bromance thing famously. Trump might have promised Macron all sorts of things. You know, he will abide by Chapter 5. He will, you know, buy French foie gras without imposing any tariffs on it. French champagne will be fine, whatever. But do you believe it for as long as that conversation actually lasts, when Steve Witkoff, you know, his fellow New York real estate mogul, who's now the special envoy to the Middle East, or is it Russia, or is it the rest of the world? We have no idea. Ends up having a meeting with the Russians and delights in Vladimir Putin being, quote, a smart, good guy, and is waxing lyrical about the portrait that Putin has commissioned from one of Russia's top painters of Donald Trump after the assassination attempt. I mean, this is bonkers. It's like dealing with the court of Henry VIII, you know, only with fewer beheadings and probably a lot less culture, but as whimsical as His Majesty on a distemper after having failed to, you know, make the right motion in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also you have the Signal messaging app leak. So, you know, JD Vance, yeah. I just hate baiting out the Europeans again. And
I fully share
your loathing of European freeloading. But then Macron has to pick up the phone and be all nice with Donald Trump and tell him exactly what they're planning to do today at their meeting.
Well, this is it. And of course, you can't cut the Americans out because they are still, let's face it, the indispensable ally, even though they've become a very capricious ally. And that is the problem. You know, we're still tied to them, whether we like it or not, but we can't rely on them anymore. So what do? You prepare for the worst. You build up your defense. You spend tons of money, which is what they said they're going to do. Although, of course, there is an argument, you know, started by Macron, whether that means you can buy defense products from the UK, which is outside the EU, or whether you can only buy French and German products. I mean, there's plenty of rows going on within that tent, but at least they're talking together. At least there is money that's come available. And at least the Germans, you know, the cash cow of Europe, have said, you know, to hell with the debt limit. We're going to be spending all this money. That's all good news. And that's happened in warp speed, as Donald Trump might like to say. But on the other hand, you know, you're still relying on the Americans and you can't trust anything they're saying. If you then overhear the playground conversation that you're not supposed to hear, which is, you know, those Europeans and they're such freeloaders and aren't they ghastly, this is what they really think. Well, it makes you wonder whether anything that protested by President Trump towards President Macron, you know, is worth of the phone line it's uttered on.
Mm-hmm. The German foreign minister this morning said that a European defence union is no longer a question of if, but how fast. Is that where you see, Matt, this going?
It's certainly heading in that direction. But of course, the dilemma of that is, if you have a European defence union, well, that also gives the Americans to say, OK, you guys, you've done a brilliant job in sorting out your own stable. You've got great, tremendous, bigly defense there. You don't need us anymore. Goodbye. We don't want that either. Of course, we want the Americans to stay involved. But they may not want to stay involved, and they may have a very viable excuse, once we've tooled up militarily, to bid us farewell. And the big problem here, Claire, is that the world, in 2 months, the world has gone from being organized roughly along, you know, values and common security interests, but around values. And those values are supra-geographical. So the values are embraced by Japan, by South Korea, by Taiwan, by Europe, you know, by the United States, one or two countries in Latin America. We've gone from that to a world that is divided into geographic political hemispheres, ruled by one, you know, big dude, you know, by one big hombre, as Trump might say. So Trump very much sees him being in charge of, you know, the Western Hemisphere. And that's why he's got his eye on Greenland and Canada and at the bottom that thing called the Panama Canal. And I have no doubt at all that he will push that issue as far as he can, possibly even militarily. Then he thinks Xi Jinping can run Asia. And, you know, the Europeans, well, you know, whoever is strongest. So it's the EU versus Russia. I mean, I think that's the way they view the world. And the trouble is that that is not a world that has provided prosperity and peace for the last 80 years. And ultimately, you know, American companies and American consumers and defense companies who won't be, you know, placing their orders with the EU anymore will pay the price.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, does he care? What do the voters do about it? Is it enough to have a correction in the midterm elections in a year and a half if the Democrats sweep the House and the Senate? He's still the president for another 2 years after that. He can do an awful lot of stuff in that time.
Matt, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you so much. Matt Fry there, Europe editor and presenter with Channel 4 News.